I'd like to dedicate this talk to my teacher, Ergin Sangharakshita. There is more than one kind of freedom, said Aunt Lydia. Freedom to and freedom from. In the days of anarchy, it was freedom to. Now you are being given freedom from. Don't underrate it. There is more than one kind of freedom, said Aunt Lydia. Freedom to and freedom from. In the days of anarchy, it was freedom to. Now you are being given freedom from. Don't waste it. So that's a little piece from a novel by Margaret Atwood, which a lot of you will know, called The Handmaid's Tale. So I first read The Handmaid's Tale in 2003, before it had been on the television, and I was actually on an aeroplane flying to Malaysia at the time, and that particular little passage just really shifted something in me, the fact that there were two kinds of freedom. There were two kinds of freedom, and somehow it wasn't just that you were moving away from anarchy or towards it. You were either free to have it or free to be free from it, if you see what I mean. And also, when I landed in Malaysia, I had been reading about the women in The Handmaid's Tale who had a life of service that they didn't particularly want, and that included wearing long skirts, wearing long sleeve dresses, wearing headdresses. And when I got off the plane in Malaysia, this is what the women were wearing: long dresses, long blouses, headscarves. I landed in Kuala Lumpur, and actually the outfits there were beautiful. They had beautiful colours, beautiful materials, the shoes were wonderful. The women did look happy. They did look happy. And then gradually we travelled north, and the further north we got, the less happy people seemed. And the women there were darker clothes and also covered their faces. So the same sort of rule, if you like, the same things they had to wear and do. Some women were feeling very happy, some weren't. Anyway, this particular piece had a big effect on me. So when Sangharakshita talked about the taste of freedom, he also talked about the word vimutti, or vimukti, freedom. And there are also two kinds of vimukti. So there's freedom of mind, complete freedom from all subjective and emotional psychological bias. And there's pranya vimukti, freedom of wisdom, freedom from all wrong views, all ignorance, all false philosophy, all opinion. And to have total spiritual freedom, freedom of the heart and mind, we need both of these freedoms. And Bhante says that also when we need to get this freedom of the heart and mind means that we'll reach the summit of our existence, the height, our full potential. So this is the aim and object of Buddhism. So these are words and these are concepts. Other words might be enlightenment, awakening, liberation. Although vimukti, freedom, is the step before enlightenment. But nevertheless, we might imagine what this word is to us. What do those words mean to you? And what's your goal? Is that your goal, your ultimate aim, to reach your highest potential, to reach the summit? That would mean complete overcoming of the mundane, freedom from suffering, complete realization of the unconditioned and the transcendental. So ask yourself, what is the word that works for me? What does it mean literally and experientially for me? Am I up for completely transforming my mind? Completely transforming my way of life? Are you up for completely transforming your mind? Completely transforming your way of life? Perhaps we could just reflect on that just a moment. So when Bhante was talking about the taste of freedom, he took that phrase from the Udana, and actually it is the name of a sutta. But in this particular Udana, it says it's called the observance day for some reason, and it's about eight strange and wonderful things, eight wonderful and marvellous things that the Buddha described the Dharma as. And he described this to monks who had been sitting, so we set the scene now, they were sitting under a full moon all night, sitting in silence, and then someone asked about the Dharma, and the Buddha likened the Dharma to the ocean. And Bhante, when he talks about that, we haven't really got time to, I will recommend reading that, having a day of looking at that. It's wonderful. But we haven't got time to go through all of the things that the Buddha said. But what Bhante translated that into for us was that we have a path of regular steps. We have a gradual approach, but it's regular. So we can ask ourselves, how are we having regular steps? Are we doing regular meditation? Are we actually turning up to things on a regular basis? Or is it something that we drop into or drop out of? Mantis really encourages us to have this path of regular steps. Just as the ocean is gradual, although this isn't literal, we know it's not gradual. But that's what it says in here. Okay. And the second one is, are we committed fully and totally to the Dharma Vinaya? Are we actually trying to live by the precepts? Can we ask ourselves that? Are we fully and totally committed to the Dharma Vinaya? Living by the precepts. The third one of these strange, wonderful and marvellous things is that actually, Bhante says, there's no nominal membership of Buddhism. You can't be a sort of nominal member. Sooner or later, you start to feel uncomfortable and you leave. So no nominal membership of the Dharma. The fourth one is that one loses one's individuality in terms of labels. So in the Indian time, people would not be in their caste system. They would have had a caste system, but they would have joined the Dharma, become one of the monks, and then been equal to the others. So in a way, we're looking to lose our labels. Perhaps we could lose our nationality, our identity as English, Finnish or Chinese. Bhante encourages us to become true individuals. So we'll all then just become true individuals who are spiritually committed human beings, instead of having all these different labels. The fifth one In here it says, whatever falls into the ocean remains the same. And Bhante translates that as nirvana remains the same, enlightenment remains the same, awakening remains the same. It doesn't matter what we bring to it, what's going on in the world, what's happening, how we are. That will always be the same. Our goal will always be the same. That's where, when we get there, it'll be the same. And the sixth one is that taste of relief, the release, the taste of freedom, that taste of salt, that taste of emancipation, freedom, liberation, awakening. And that taste is always the same. Just as nirvana is always the same, the taste is always the same. Just as the ocean is always salty. The seventh one was Dharma Vinaya contains many jewels, just as the ocean contains many things. And there are many jewels in terms of, Bhante relates this to things like the Four Noble Truths, the Eightfold Path, the Six Paramitas, all the little jewels, all the things that we can have as our tools, as our way to learn the Dharma, as our way to become awakened. And the eighth one is that it also contains arahats and enlightened beings and bodhisattvas and dharkanis. So what we're trying to... So Sangharajita says there's no spiritual life without an ever-continuing sense of wonder. And this is what we're trying to develop. We're trying to take delight in the Dharma and hear it again and again, just as we'd watch the ocean again and again. We'd watch the movement of the ocean. We watch the way the waves come in and out. We listen to the lapping sound of the ocean. We watch the colours change on the surface. We're delighted in it. We take joy in it. We're enthralled by it. We see it, we swim in it, we paddle in it. And we can translate this into our lives, into our Dharma lives, into our ordinary lives, into taking delight in it, finding joy in things, watching, enjoying, making sure that we have that sense of wonder, that sense of marvellousness. So the Dharma's vast, just as the ocean is vast. And Bhante describes the Dharma as vast and shoreless, not fixed or rigid. The Dharma is wonderful, the Buddha is wonderful, the spiritual community is wonderful, the spiritual life is wonderful. Sitting and meditating together is wonderful. Living together in community is wonderful. Team-based right livelihood is wonderful. Sitting here listening to the Dharma is wonderful. Me talking the Dharma is wonderful. So all wondrous, marvellous, strange in a way, very strange to outsiders, and strange and intriguing to us, because we're learning something new all the time. So we're trying to create that young, new learning feeling, or keep that going, not create it, rather. The way children are inquisitive and love to know things, then we too can become inquisitive and love to know things. But sometimes things seem old and familiar and actually sort of breed indifference. And I did relate to this in terms of sometimes it's quite difficult to go along every week to something. So I was thinking in terms of Sangha night, you know, very difficult sometimes. You're tired, you don't want to go. And I didn't know Ratna Ghosh was going to be here tonight. But I'm going to tell a little story about him. So there was a night recently when I got into that awful thing where you think, oh, it's just another Sangha night. It's just, and Rat Negoshi is giving another talk. And it is the Pali Canon. I mean, you know, I've heard lots of talk from the Pali Canon. So feeling a bit sort of tired and jaded and on that cusp of not actually coming. But I did come. I did come to that talk. And I won't tell you which one it was because I don't want to sort of digress away from this. But I came and I was just, well, taken to another place with that talk. That talk was just so meaningful to me. I related to the actual story. There was a phrase in it which was something that I needed to do, that was something that I had been thinking about and needing to work on. And it did seem to me that during the whole of that talk, Rat Negoshi just kept saying this phrase over and over again because he knew I needed to hear it. And that's what happened during that evening. And that has happened to me before. So that I do have this tendency to sometimes get into this feeling of old and familiar. But I'm learning to go through that, or I always have gone through it, sort of rather grumpily. But I've never, ever, in 21 years, come away from a Sangha night feeling like that. I always come away feeling nourished, nurtured, inspired. So I would just encourage you to just keep an eye on that. Just keep an eye on that and don't go with it. Okay. So how do you keep the magic, mystery and the wonder of the Dharma alive? Is it enjoyable or is it a struggle? Is it a hard slog? So I thought we might just spend a few minutes now sharing with your neighbour. See if you can be honest and say, is it enjoyable or is it a hard slog? And how are you going to keep that magic and mystery? So we'll only have a few minutes each. So talk to your neighbour. So if you haven't got to the end of a conversation, I'd encourage you to finish that at the tea break. So we thought about what enlightenment is. And we've talked about how to keep the joy in our spiritual lives, take delight in our spiritual lives. But why did Sangharakshita use the word taste? So it's not an idea, it's not a concept. It's something to be experienced. It's a taste. Our taste is a direct experience. And it's only our individual experience. Each of us tastes something in a slightly different way. I don't know if you've ever tried to cook anything for lots of people. Some people don't want any salt in it. Some people want a little bit of salt in it. Some people want a lot of salt in it. They think the taste is right for them. So everybody's perception of taste, their own taste, is individual. But that taste is a direct experience, is what they're experiencing at the time. And we need to come back to our direct experience again and again in the spiritual life. Not just know the theory, but actually come back to the experience. So Sangharakshita also talks about the Nidana chains, the links, so 24 links, 12 worldly, representing the wheel of life, the reactive mind, and 12 spiritual, stages of the path to enlightenment, the creative mind. So I'm just going to read them through just very quickly so we just get a sense of them. So independence on suffering arises faith and devotion. Independence on faith and devotion arises satisfaction and delight. Independence upon satisfaction and delight arises rapture. Independence upon rapture arises tranquility. Independence upon tranquility arises bliss. Independence upon bliss arises samadhi. In dependence upon samadhi arises knowledge and vision of things as they really are. In dependence on knowledge of things, knowledge and vision of things as they really are, arises disengagement and disentanglement. Independent on disengagement and disentanglement arises dispassion. Independence on dispassion arises vimutti. Independence on vimutti arises knowledge of the destruction of the biases. So enlightenment, our goal, a complete overcoming of the mundane, complete realization of the unconditioned and the transcendental. So it's very clearly laid out there that cause into effect, effect into cause, arises in dependence on or conditioned by. So sometimes known as conditioned co-production or dependent origination. But how many of us truly believe that every act of our body, speech and mind that we make has an effect, and that that effect will become the cause of what happens next? Do we really, really believe this? Do we live our lives bearing that in mind, that what we do, what we say, what we think will have an effect in one way or another? So Sankaracharya, when he talks about the links, says the crucial link here is knowledge and vision as things as they really are. So to get to that is the transition from calm to insight. So you can have insight without freedom, but you cannot have freedom without insight. And you cannot have insight without calm, and you cannot have calm without meditation. So that's the basis. No calm, no shamatha without meditation, no vipassana without calm, without shamatha, no freedom, vimukti, without vipassana. So they're all linked, and they're all based on meditation, on our meditation practice. So how important is your meditation practice? Well, we can see it's very important, but how important is it to us? Do we really have that edge? Do we really know that this is the basis of our road to freedom? And have we set up the right conditions to make sure that happens? If we feel able to reach knowledge and vision of things as they really are, we could be poised to break the first three fetters. So there are 10 fetters in all that bind us, that stop us from being free. I think that's a really strong word, that idea of fetter. Really, if you can imagine that, being fettered. And that's a lot of the time what we do to ourselves. So there are 10 fetters in all, but Bhante talks in this talk about the first three fetters in order to become a stream entrant. And I'll say more about that in a minute. So there are traditional ways of talking about these fetters, but in this particular talk, Bhante describes them in this way. He talks about the first fetter as the fetter of habit, the second as the fetter of superficiality, and the third as the fetter of vagueness. So habit, very familiar word. So that means we act in a particular way with our body, speech and mind. So we've developed these habits over the years with our conditioning, our life, our thoughts. And we know as Buddhists that actually what we're trying to do is change our habits. We're trying to work at changing. And that might seem reasonably straightforward, although it is it can be difficult. But actually, there's also our habit in the light of other people's expectations. So Bhante says, the group is the enemy of the true individual. The group is the enemy of the true individual. Somehow this group wants to keep us the same, how we were. It's as if they're relating to someone who doesn't actually exist at the minute. And we need to break away from that habit-reinforcing influence of the group. So families are a good example of this, because families tend to remember us the way we were as children and young people. And I know with my own mother, if she sometimes treats me as though I'm two, I find myself wanting to act as though I'm two. Have a bit of a tantrum about things. So we can fall into that conditioned pattern with our families. But that doesn't always mean breaking away from the group, although it might at some point. But particularly with families, we need to develop strength. We need to develop awareness about how we are going to be within that group. And we need to continually be positive and creative if we're going to keep transforming and transitioning while still being sometimes in contact with that particular group. So because we're constantly changing as we progress towards enlightenment, but other people aren't, and we have to bear that in mind. Other people aren't necessarily changing. In fact, certainly in my family, I think they make it a point not to. You know, they really sort of dig their heels in. They want to keep things the same. So we need to keep vigilant in the midst of others who haven't changed. And we need to be confident about what we're doing. So we need to ask ourselves, am I happy to change and to be seen changing? Or am I stuck? And sometimes you get little clues. I think if you find yourself saying things like, I'm the sort of person who, or I would never do, never, you know, I can't do that, or I'm the sort of person who always does this or always does that. So we sometimes get little clues about that. So watch out for those. So the second fetta is superficiality. So this sort of speaks for itself. We're only working at a higher level, really. And when we're or one level, one part of ourselves, we're divided, we're not integrated, okay? We're not acting with the whole of ourselves. We're not being wholehearted in what we do. So we're either just thinking of things and working on in that way and not including our emotion, or occasionally we're having an emotional outburst and giving no thought to what that might be. So let's think about our lives. What are we doing in our daily lives? Are we meditating, communicating, working with the whole of ourselves, or just part of ourselves present? Are we fully, wholeheartedly present in what we're doing? And if we're going for refuge with only part of ourselves present, then we're not going to get far. We're not going to develop and grow. So you could ask yourselves, are you committed to the spiritual life? Are you committing yourself to being a true individual? Are you wholehearted in what you do and how you live your life? So the third fetta is vagueness. Oh, and I do relate to this one very much. So, vague when we do not want to commit ourselves, basically. And let's face it, the spiritual life is very difficult. And growth and development is a painful process. And basically, we want to keep our options open. You know, if we dip our toe in there a bit and it's looking a bit painful, we might just be inclined to sidestep slightly and wait and see what happens, rather than actually face things full on and be prepared to be clear. So we can ask ourselves, are we prepared to be willing to think things through clearly, to see what alternatives there are, perhaps, to sort out our priorities, and to make up our minds, to make a choice, and then follow that choice wholeheartedly, and not postpone that decision. So that's working ground for me. So, habit. Bhante says the positive aspect of that, or side to that, is to be creative. Try and see that things can be different. Be creative. If you've always done things a certain way, can you imagine yourself doing things another way, doing things differently? Can you imagine yourself being in a different way, speaking, acting differently? Superficiality, he says we need to develop commitment. Can we be committed to what we're doing? Can we wholeheartedly be committed to what we're doing? And vagueness, we need to be clear. We need to be understanding and clear and look into what we're doing. So I was going to get you to talk to each other about those things, but we're coming near the end. So I'll encourage you to talk to each other in the break about that, what your take is on the on those fetters and how you work with them. Perhaps you could share that with each other. So I'll just recap now that Sankaracharya says the crucial transformation point, there's a crucial transformation here between calm, shamatha, to insight, vipassana. And if we can break those three fetters, get through that habit, superficiality and vagueness, then we can enter the stream, then we'll be going in the direction that we want to go. And we'll become a true individual and taste freedom in its fullest sense. But we also need to remember that every part of the Dharma Vinaya is pervaded with freedom. So it has the essence and flavour of freedom. And as we're doing things where we're gaining little insights, or perhaps just trying to get forward a little bit, we've got to look out for and be ready to taste, have a taste or a sense or a flavour. And it will take courage, and do we have the courage to taste or experience the spiritual qualities of the Dharma Vinaya that will change our lives? It will change our lives, we will change, and it will change the lives of others. So I want to end with another little quote, and actually it is from a Margaret Atwood novel, and you could be forgiven for thinking that's all I do, sit around reading Margaret Atwood novels. I don't actually, but I have read a few of hers over the years. That one in 2003 was the first one. And I am very struck by the way she observes people and the way she sort of yeah, the way she observes people, basically. And someone did ask her about how she actually imagined or made up the things that happens in the Handmaid's Tale. So it's set in a place called Gilead, and lots of quite awful things happen in this place. And Margaret Atwood said she didn't make up anything, basically. She'd researched this, and everything that happened in The Handmaid's Tale had happened sometime in history and somewhere in the world. She had just brought these things together. And I found that very chilling, actually. But nevertheless, it was true. So I'm going to read this little piece twice, then we'll just sit for a minute and I'll ring a bell, and then we can have a cup of tea. You can choose to hear it or not. If you hear it, you'll be more free, but less secure. If you don't hear it, you'll be more secure, but less free. You can choose to hear it or not. If you hear it, you'll be more free, but less secure. If you don't hear it, you'll be more secure, but less free. Thank you.